This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live, and certainly vital to all people, because there's no more important issue facing the world than the problem of Jewish supremacism. It's affecting the slaughter going on in the Middle East right now. It's affecting all of us in so many ways. The control of the media is such an essential issue for all of us to address, because without learning the truth about what's going on in the world, it's hard to make decisions and have a plan of action which will be beneficial to our people and to all people. Here we go. This is going to be the last and final part to Chapter 5, which is entitled Jewish Media Supremacy, from my book, Jewish Supremacism. Next section is Jewish Emissions and Media Supremacy. During my hundreds of interviews over the years, whenever I mentioned Jewish media domination, my interrogators would first deny the Jewish predominance of power. When that defense sank beneath a sea of facts, then they would argue that the Jewish supremacy means nothing. Finally, they argued that it's evil to suggest that Jews might use their media power for their own advantage. The domination of America's news and entertainment media is so obvious that some Jewish media have begun to acknowledge it, but they suggest the Jewish domination makes no real impact on content. The cover of the 1996 issue of Moment magazine was emblazoned with the headline, "Jews Run Hollywood, So What?" The question mark written by well-known Jewish film critic Michael Medved includes the following comments. Quote, "It makes no sense at all to try to deny the real reality of Jewish power and prominence in popular culture. Any list of the most influential production executives at each of the major movie studios will produce a heavy majority of recognizably Jewish names." Medved reports how Walt Disney Studios hire only highly paid Jewish moguls such as Jeffrey Katzenberg, Michael Ovitz, and Joe Roth as producers. He goes on to state, quote, "The famous Disney organization, which was founded by Walt Disney, a Gentile Midwesterner who allegedly harbored anti-Semitic attitudes, now features Jewish personnel in nearly all of its most powerful positions." Interestingly, in spite of the attempts to besmirch the name of Walt Disney as an anti-Semite, his films were the most morally and spiritually uplifting as well as educational in the industry. In contrast, Michael Eisner's New Disney and its subsidiaries now make many anti-Christian and sexually degenerate films such as The Priest and The Crying Game. Not only do the Jewish producers create a plethora of pro-Israel and pro-Jewish propaganda along with their anti-Christian, anti-Gentile hate films and documentaries, they are careful to monitor films made by both Jews and Gentiles. For example, Jewish censors of the fact-based film 7 Years in Tibet felt that the main character, an ex-Nazi explorer from Austria, was not repentant enough about his past. They had the filmmaker invent a repentance scene and insert it into the, quote, true story. Michael Medved writes in his article that, quote, "Jewish writers and directors employ unquestionably flattering depictions of Jews for audiences that react with sympathy and affection." Unquote. It goes without saying that Jewish directors and writers depict those who oppose Jewish supremacism as thoroughly evil. A 1998 made-for-television film documentary aired on the Arts and Entertainment cable network boasted of the preeminent Jewish role in media and the shaping of our society to their purposes. It was made by Elliot Halpern and Simcha Jakubovici Productions and was written and directed by Simcha Jakubovici. The documentary tells how Jews overcame the Gentile filmmakers such as Thomas Edison and D.W. Griffith and gradually replaced their traditional American themes. Movies such as Griffith's Birth of a Nation, which honored a traditional heritage, became replaced with paeans to the immigrant and multi racialism of today. They interview Jewish author Neil Gabler, who frankly tells how they, quote, devoured, unquote, the values of traditional America. Quote, they created their own America, an America which is not the real America, but ultimately the shadow America becomes so popular and so widely disseminated that its images and its values come to devour the real America. And so the grand irony of all of Hollywood is that Americans come to define themselves by the shadow of America that was created by the Eastern European Jewish immigrants who weren't permitted in the precincts of the real America. Unquote. The narrator goes on to say that the Hollywood Jews became almost godlike in their power and set up a system to raise their prestige in the eyes of the average American. Quote, where there were new gods, there must be new idols. So the studio heads began a movie guild with the lofty title of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. It was Mayer's brilliant idea to create the Oscars, where the movie moguls guild honor themselves by giving each other awards. In this way, they went from being a group of immigrant Jews to award-winning American producers. And the last section on the media chapter, the lesson of Marlon Brando. Jewish power is such that they can make craven even the greatest of Hollywood icons. Marlon Brando is a prime example. In the early days of his acting career, he was completely under the control of Jewish agents and acquaintances. Brando wrote in his autobiography that he was given an important role in a disgustingly pro-Zionist play called A Flag is Born, written by avid Zionist Ben Hecht and directed by Luther Adler. As Brando notes, and I quote, it was essentially a piece of political propaganda advocating the creation of the State of Israel. Everyone in A Flag is Born was Jewish except me. I did not know then that Jewish terrorists were indiscriminately killing Arabs and making refugees out of them in order to take their land. The play, as well as my friendship with the Adlers, helped make me a zealous advocate for Israel and later a kind of traveling salesman for it. Unquote. Brando then began giving propaganda speeches for a Zionist organization and even contributed money himself to the Zionist Irgun organization, a terrorist group. Marlon Brando later learned the truth about Zionism and dramatically changed his opinion. Now, he said in 1994, I understand much more about the complexity of the situation than I did then. I sided with Jewish terrorists without acknowledging that they were killing innocent Palestinians in their effort to create the State of Israel. One of the strangest government policies is that, largely because of the political influence of Jewish interests, our country has invested billions of dollars in many American lives to help Israel reclaim land that they say their ancestors occupied 3,000 years ago. Unquote. During an appearance on a Larry King television show, actor Marlon Brando dared to comment that, quote, Hollywood is run by Jews, unquote. It's owned by Jews. Brando contended that Jews were always depicted as humorous, kind, loving, and generous, while they slander every other racial group, quote, but are ever so careful to ensure that there is never any negative image of the kike, unquote. Jewish groups came down unmercifully on Brando, stating in their press releases that they would see to it that he would, quote, never work again. No one in the Jewish press seemed to notice that the threats simply validated Brando's observation of their unchallenged media power. Brando became so intimidated by the onslaught of hatred and threats against him that he had to arrange an audience with Rabbi Heer of the Seaman Wiesenthal Center. In probably the best acting job of his life, Brando cried and got on his knees and kissed Rabbi Heer's hands, begging for forgiveness for offending the supreme Jewish gods of the Western world. Brando publicly renounced his heresy against the new Jewish gods, and thus the Jewish high priest absolved him for his sin. Brando had become a good object lesson for famous Gentiles who might dare speak the truth about Jewish supremacism, and he has said nothing but positive things about Jews ever since that time. If someone wants to understand how the Jewish supremacists maintain their almost complete media control, the Brando incident is an excellent illustration. They do it both by the carrot and the stick. They reward those goyim who go along with their evil, as they did Brando in his early career. But they're unmerciful to anyone who dares to utter even a word against them. Public figures who publicly oppose them have to be either incredibly stupid or magnificently brave. Marlon Brando naively thought that by telling the obvious truth about Israel, he might endure serious criticism. But he never dreamed of the tidal wave of filth and abuse that would descend upon him. In a pitiful scene, Brando prostrated himself at the feet of his master like a whimpering dog, literally licking the hand of the tyrant that beat him. There can be no renewal for our people until that kind of intimidating power is broken. There is no possibility of redemption for our people until we summon the courage necessary to defy our Jewish supremacist overlords. Finally, no regeneration of our society can occur until real freedom of speech and press is restored. Once I discovered the Jewish power over the American media, I resolved never to surrender my freedom of speech in deference to it. No matter if it might cost me my reputation, my freedom, or even my life, I became and still remain determined to oppose the media masters who seek to destroy our way of life and our very life form itself. I am confident that in time my kinsmen will likewise rise up in defiance rather than kneel in dishonor, as Marlon Brando did to our would-be masters. Well, that's the end of Chapter 5, Jewish Media Supremacy. I know you enjoyed it. I hope that you'll do your best to spread this chapter to other individuals, friends, family, associates, all over the world, because you can communicate now with the Internet that way so easily, and it's a great and powerful means. The next chapter is very critical, and it kind of points out what's going on in Lebanon today, and that's the chapter, Jewish Political Supremacy. We talked about media supremacy. Next chapter deals with the mechanics of Jewish political supremacy in America. That's chapter 6. Thank you so much for being with me, and remember that your support and your contributions enable me to continue this work, lecture as I do all over the world, spread these ideas, keep our websites going, keep our publications going, and without your help, I couldn't do what I'm doing. If you do appreciate it, I hope you'll take a moment and write me at box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470, and or simply go to my website and make a contribution and order some books and other material from our site. Appreciate you very much. I look forward to being with you tomorrow for the beginnings of Chapter 6, Jewish Political Supremacy.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddu.com.